AJC.
Okay. In 0TR. Got 107 degrees here out in the sun with 123 heat index, my weather station's telling me. Bad news bears.
The kids just went down to the lake. They're going to try to get out. It gets a little bit later on, I guess. At least they'll be out of the sun. But I can take that heat. I can't take it, though.
Ambience this hot out there. It's ridiculous. The daughter was just texting me, and she says, we're not moving there, and that's why I don't live there either. But she lives in Michigan, and she was whining not long ago about the cold, wasn't she? Not letting up, Bernice. And she likes cold, but it was extreme this year. Bernice remembers baling hay when it was 113 back in Kansas in the late 50s, so it ain't all that unusual.
When you take all the greenery away and add concrete and buildings and stuff, it just makes everything hotter. You get up above about 3,000 feet, though, and it starts getting a little cooler, more comfortable anyway. I always liked about 2,500 feet, and then you start feeling a little bit better anyway. It's still hot if you're out in the sun, though, but you get a little shade, it's not bad. And the humidity is, I can't tell, I mean, it's just plain hot today. The humidity is one thing, but it's just plain hot. It's just one of those days where you don't have a break. There's not a cloud in the sky here. You don't get a break, and even in the shade, it's awful.
It was clouding up here a while ago, but not badly. Not enough to rain. And that's another thing. When that front went through, the humidity here now is 36%. I'm looking at it on the weather station. Heck, the humidity down here in the basement's 38. And, you know, it's 78 degrees, but it feels real nice. Got a fan running in the background. You can probably hear it over on the other side, but it's not pointed at me.
At 38% relative, at over 100 is a lot different than 38 at 78 degrees, too. It holds more, hot air holds more moisture molecules, also, I'm told. So I remember when I was out in Texas, it's been probably 25 years ago now, I guess, maybe a little longer. We were buying a piece of equipment out in Waco, Texas, and it was 108 outside. We were in a building, just like a metal storage warehouse. We had to bring our own fans in. It was ventilated, but didn't have any air conditioning or anything, and we were working on that machinery, taking it apart, getting ready to load it onto a trailer. And it was just incredibly hot. You couldn't breathe in there. And there wasn't any, of course, that part of Texas, there wasn't a breeze anywhere.
Bernice just brought me some cashews over in the ginger ale. And it's nice and cold. Well, Jerry, they sent me to San Angelo, Texas to change the color of our conduit on our 42-inch water valves, cone valves, to black, because the gray wasn't sunlight resistant. I remember back then my airfare was $600 to go from Kansas down there. So it just was one of the government's things, you know. And it was very, very hot out there in San Angelo. That and Farmington, New Mexico, I think the good Lord made them the armpit of the world when he created them.
New Mexico, just briefly, when I was over near Lubbock and a couple of other places, Pueblo, Texas, and Lubbock and over in that area, I went into New Mexico. One of the guys I called on he hunted mules there, and he liked to hunt in New Mexico. And, it wasn't that far from the border. It's only about 30, 40 miles from the New Mexico border, I guess. And he said they go in New Mexico and hunt mule deer and antelope and this has been like 8 years ago, but it was really hot down there, but they get rain. When it rained, I mean, it just rained. It rained for days sometimes when they got in. The river down there rose 36 feet 1 year. I missed it by about a year or two, I guess. It just flooded the whole plant out and everything. I don't recall now if they had to take everything out of it and dry it out and put it back in, rebuild it or what, but it was just a huge mess. They lost, I mean, they've had millions of dollars worth of equipment in there.
It's in Gerald TR. Yeah, I had to drive. I forget, an hour and a half, I think it was, from my motel just to get out to the job site there. And it was just desert and a horrible place. And then Farmington, New Mexico, I landed on a plateau, and then I had to go out a long ways to the job site, and I had to set these, they're huge, they're not like what you visualize a limit switch, they're very big with all kinds of contacts and controls in them, to raise and lower the gates on a dam, and I had to go out there and set those and check them out. And I got to tell you, I was just about scared to get out of the car because some guy got bit by a rattlesnake just before I got there, and they helicoptered him out. And everywhere you look was cactus or mesquite, and then that rocks. That was about it.
Friend of mine I worked with, she was a nurse that... She married a guy. She moved out to Arizona some years back and married a guy out there. And she likes it out there, but you know, it just looks so barren. Some parts of the state are really pretty, but it just looks so barren. I can't remember what part of the state she's in now. Maybe Sedona, maybe. I'm not sure. But it just looks so barren where they live. It's just, I don't think I could take that. They have those monsoons out there, too, that come through about once a year. I think it just flood everything, too. I think, Tom, I may be in the wrong part of the state. They got some place up in the mountains somewhere. They go up there, you know, to get away from the heat. Of course, when you get above certain altitudes, I guess out there it's just like anywhere else. It's going to be cooler, but... She was just telling me that, you know, when you get above that high desert, it'll get really cold at night, too. So it'll freeze you at night sometimes.
I remember I had a little Chevy Citation, and it was the first front-wheel drive I ever had. It was a rental car, of course. And I was driving down the highway, and I saw this school bus stop right in the middle of nowhere, just cactus and desert. And I thought, well, he might be broke down, so I slowed down slow as I approached it and stopped. And they put the sign out, and there was, I think it was two little Indian kids got out, and they just started walking out across that desert. There wasn't no house there. So I don't know, maybe they lived in a cave or something, but I just wondered, where in the world did those kids live at, right out there in the middle of the desert like that?
I think they'd be close enough that it's so sparsely populated, some parts of the state is just, they might have to walk 2 miles to the house, and I'm sure there wasn't a road there, they weren't going to drive from there. It does seem kind of odd, though, sure enough.
I thought maybe he was broke down or something, but the door come open, these two little kids come out with their books and started walking across the desert, so apparently they knew what they was doing, but wow, I wouldn't want to live there, I'll tell you for sure, Jared, and that was one of the worst jobs I ever went on. It was a union site. And the bosses that were running this Navajo Indian irrigation project, which was miles and miles of waterway and stuff, they got in a big argument with the guys that were installing the valves. And the valves were still on the truck. My company told me that they're ours until they set them down at the job site. When I got there, they were sitting on the ground, but it wasn't over at the job site. And they went back, and wow, you talk about a cussing match. I just stood back. I didn't want to work around them or with them or anything else. It was IBEW. And they said the valves were theirs the second they hit the job site. And the foreman there said, no, they're not installed yet, so they're not yours. Finally, I got to be the inspector and just overseeing them changing the color of the conduit. I don't forget that as long as I live. I told our executive vice president, I don't want to be their boss. He said I'd be their boss at first. I said, no. And finally, they agreed I'd be the inspector. And I said, well, I'll do that. But it was a mess. But they're painting the roads with this sunlight-resistant stuff in Phoenix. I just read that earlier on Yahoo News. And it's supposedly they got 62 miles of it painted. And I think it's, wasn't it gray, Bernice? It was gray, but it's got a little reflection to it. And it doesn't absorb the heat as much. And they found that it drops the temperatures in the city about 10 degrees or so.
I've seen some gray road lines. It might have been in Florida time. I've seen some. I mean, unless I dreamed, I've seen some in the last year. Said I think maybe when we drove down to Florida, we saw some signs on some near construction. There, I mean, excuse me, saw some lines on some near construction. They were gray. I'm not sure if it was the center line or not. It might have been the border lines, but I saw some of that. It was just kind of a medium gray. It wasn't dark gray, but yeah, you could see it, and it was reflective. I did recall that when we were coming back through. It didn't look like, you know, it was fairly, it looked new to me, but again, it might have been my mind might have been deceiving me. That does make sense, though. But, you know, any time that you put all this concrete down and fill all these shopping malls and parking lots, you know, the runoff, and it's just, we just don't plan far enough in the future for those sorts of things. I just noticed so many of these places are vacant now. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I don't understand why they don't build where they are instead of, you know, they just build totally new and somewhere else. And I'm sure they do it for location purposes, but to me, it's certainly a waste of land.
Well, this, Jerry, they showed a picture of it there on the Yahoo News on the internet. I just look at some interesting articles on there. I try not to look at the politics stuff. And the whole road is painted that color, Jerry, not just the lines. They were a light gray. And, you know, I noticed on the morning local Fox News station here, WYFF4, Greenville is always 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 degrees hotter downtown than it is. We're 14 miles northeast.
You're talking about the roads, yeah. They when they built 85, they, you know, they used concrete for it here, and at least throughout the part of Georgia when they built it, from basically from the other side. It was actually the other side of about where Commerce is now. He had to drive a good bit of ways on regular two-lane road before he got to the four-lane back in the late 50s. And then you hit the four-lane. It was all concrete. And, you know, they poured that concrete in and said it lasts for X number of years. And, of course, it lasted maybe 40. And that was about it before they started redoing it. But the asphalt, it just doesn't... asphalt just doesn't last very long. And they don't know how to patch it either. They don't use any of that. They just put it in there and dump it in there and just pat it down with a shovel instead of putting some geotextile or something there in it and let it set up with a... And the potholes will stay fixed if they do that. But, yeah, they do it as cheap as possible and just have to redo it about it. Every time it rains or freezes, it seems like.
Yeah, you're exactly right. They have a show on the Fox News channel, and you can scan this QR code and send in your gripes to them. And it's amazing how accurate they are, and they even hit some of the roads around us. But what's that one that we go down all the time over there, Rutherford? It's just patches, and when it rains, the patches just go away. So, I don't know. I think it'd be better off if they just paved the whole thing. Supposedly, with this gas tax, they should have lots of money. And with all these new houses, they should have even more money from all the taxes. It may boil down to equipment and manpower, Jerry. I don't know the logistics of it, but they surely are letting the roads go to pot. You're right.
Local, he used to be our local senator, Kevin Bryant. He's been a friend of ours for many years. He and David Booth went to a pharmacy school in Georgia, and we knew the, and my wife's family's got ties to Georgia from years and years gone by. And he told me, he argued against it either when he was in the Senate or when he was lieutenant governor for a short period of time. He said, that increase is not going to patch roads. It's going to be for new infrastructure. It ain't going to do one thing for patching roads. And he was right about that. Of course, he's not in office anymore. But I remember what he told me that, and also another guy that I know very well told me, he said, it's not going to do what you think it's going to do. He said, people think it's going to help the roads. He said, all they're going to do is build more of them, but they're not going to fix the ones they got. I mean, they got a $2 or $3 billion budget, I think, Tom, but they don't, the Department of Transportation has always been kind of tough to deal with. They got their own little fiefdom, I think.
Yeah, I wrote him a letter here about this stoplight down here about 2 years ago, and they actually got it done. They told me that the first thing was going to be a turn lane, and then later on they considered a stoplight, but there was no funds for it. But yet they built 400 houses up here just in one spot. In the road, people going to work just be lined up for a couple of miles. And, by golly, they did put in a stoplight, and it's sequenced pretty darn good. I'm proud of them. I talked to somebody on the repeater here now and then, and he's the one that goes out and programs the PLCs and stuff that run the light, and they got algorithms and things that are set up to do it, and then they can go into the PLC and alter that function, need be. They did that down at Wade Hampton and Buncombe Road. It was initially set up wrong, and they went down there and they straightened it out, so occasionally they get it right, but up to that point that they put this light in, I always said if they did anything intelligent, it'd be out of character.
Brown Road. I live just off Brown, and when you guys come in from 81 down Brown, like where Sam's is, and they put a roundabout up there where Crummer's business place is, and that was wasn't that busy of an intersection there, but I think his political clout got him that roundabout. Down here where King's Road crosses Brown, it's just not a whole lot of traffic comes through either side, because one side goes into a subdivision, the other side of it goes down Kings, which goes to the connector and on across to Concord. It just kind of goes across the lake, and then that way, they had a four-way stop here one time, and then people couldn't figure out how to do the four-way stop, and I asked them, I said, look, why don't you just put a traffic light? Well, we can't put a traffic light up there, so why not? I said, just time to say whenever somebody pulls up there, it's going to change. They may have to sit there for a minute or two, and it's going to change, and set up just like you do the other ones, where the big intersection gets most of the green light. Oh, it's going to cost so much money. Well, instead of doing that, they put a $1.6 million roundabout down here. It's a single lane. It's a real narrow one. And people keep remembering them. They don't, you know, people in the roundabout, especially they have huge places to yield to, they just run right on through it. And we have them just about every, seems like about every 2 or 3 weeks, and we just drive straight across it, knocks all the signs down, and just keeps on going. Instead of going roundabout, you pull across the top of it. And it's almost too small for a fire truck to go through without running up on the curb. It's just the biggest waste of money I've ever seen. It's crazy.
Well, they started to put a roundabout in up here by the Lake Cunningham Fire Department, and that was one of the gripes, was that the fire trucks, if I remember rightly, wouldn't be able to negotiate the roundabout because they're sitting right on the corner there, and with all these new houses and that up here, they're getting lots and lots of runs. And with the increased traffic, they're getting lots of accidents up here. It's amazing. And if you go from our house down towards Wade Hampton, that road, Jerry, those people come around those curves, and they're not running the speed limit, of course. And you know what? There ain't no place to go. If he comes into your lane, you just bought the farm, because there's just no shoulder on a great deal of it going through those curves by that old mill and that down there. You can't run, you can't hide, you're just dead meat.
What you talking about? The one here at Brown and King's has got the center part of it has just got a little ramp up on the center part. The center part's just about 3 or 4 inches above the road. It's just got a little ramp up so they can ride up over the top of it if they need to, but the outside is curbed. And it's barely wide enough. I mean, you can't get 2 cars in there. And when the fire truck comes through there, you might as well just get off the road, because he's gonna come across there and just come straight across. That's about what they have to do if they go that way. But I'm not really sure if the county fire department, they cover it about right where that is. And I think the city may take over from there. But, the same thing with ambulances. These big ambulances, they can't negotiate through there without running over the curb. I just don't understand why. Well, the guy over here in the subdivision gave them, I don't know how many acres of land to be able to make it bigger, and they didn't, they changed it. And it works a little bit better than it would have, but it's just not big enough. It needs to be about another 15 feet bigger, because the turns are real sharp in there, and be able to swap back off of it. And then again, people think the yield means they just barely slow down and barrel on through it, rather than yielding to somebody that's already in the traffic circle. So, the other one's better designed, and this other one's a lot bigger, and this one's just not. This is real small. It's just not designed well at all. When I raised Kane about it, when I saw it, they had the design put up and had it showing it a couple of either the firehouse up here or a couple other places. And I went up and I talked to the engineer about it. This thing is not big enough. I said, you can make it 5 or 6 feet bigger in diameter. And I said, it would be fine. But I said, the thing is not big enough. I said, it's going to be a problem. And there's a wreck there, Tom, at least once a month. It's just something. I mean, those people fly through that thing, too. They don't go 15 miles an hour in 40 GC.
I went through one going down to the doctor's office the other day down there by Verde Boulevard down towards the Woodruff Road area. I'm not a big fan of them. I know they work, and they work well as a general rule to move a lot of traffic through them, but I just don't like them. The daughter up in Michigan, they got a lot of them, and she likes them, but they make me nervous that I'll do something wrong and cause an accident, but I guess it's because I've never been around them very much, but I don't like them. Well, a good friend of ours up here, was over to the other day. His daughter said, she's pretty young. She's about 30. She's thinking about buying a motorcycle. And, I told her when I worked at the hospital before I retired, they called them donor cycles. And she's a little bit slow. And me and her daddy tried to talk her out of it. Now, she hasn't bought one. She's got the funds for it. But So today, I was just looking at some of those earlier today just for the fun of it and daydreaming. I'd love to be able to ride again, but not down here. They got some scooters now, Jerry, that are, I seen one Yamaha in there, I think it was 560cc's, and one of them had run 110. I think that one runs 94. Boy, they look really nice, some of those real high-end scooters, and I'm not talking about mopeds.
They just made them a step-through type. They just made them, you know, just made them bigger and more powerful. And some of them do. They'll haul buggy. You know, the days of the Vespas and those small ones are, you know, just basically done now. You know, if you got to have insurance, they get big. I haven't seen any that big, but I saw one Honda, I think it might have been Yamaha. And that thing was, I mean, it was every bit as big as the wheels were smaller, of course, but it was every bit as big as a you know, standard 250 road bike. It was pretty, and they just had the windshield and had the you know, step-through stuff instead of having to throw your leg over. And that was about the only difference in it, I think.
Yeah, they're lower to the ground. They got good storage on them. On the higher end ones, like a Honda Silverwing, I don't know how many cc's that was, but it's up there. And got a lot of horsepower. And I had a friend back in Kansas that overhauls Gold Wings all the time, and he had a scooter, and he says, I'd rather ride that than it would the Gold Wing. Tom, when he rides over to Joplin, he said, which was like 30 miles. And I've seen them occasionally, but not a whole lot of them. But they did make one called a Silverwing. But there's quite a few Suzuki and different ones manufacture. Those things got a GPS on the 7-inch screen on the front of it. They got Bluetooth to your headset and your helmet. They got a lot of nice stuff on them now, Jerry. It's pretty amazing, and they get really good mileage. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see more of them, but if so, around here, people don't respect them, you'll see more people killed on them, I'm afraid.
And there are a lot of these riders, too, time of inexperience, they have been riding long. They'll buy one, hadn't ever thrown a leg across a motorcycle before. They'll ride one for a while and think they know what they're doing, then get in a jam and not know what to do. And if you've had years of experience on a bike, you're a lot more cautious than most people are. And particularly cars, they just don't, you know, there's so many distractions in a car now. But there's no one where I drive one out on the street anymore. I enjoy riding them when I could, but it's been 30 years ago, and I don't think you can pay me to get on one now.
Same way, Jerry, I'd love to have one, but common sense tells me it's not the best idea in the world, especially when you get older, because if you go down, you're going to be busted up bad. And some of these things, like those Harleys, that's why they call them a hog, I guess, because they weigh about 900 pounds. And in their defense, the Hondas and the Kawasakis and all of those are very heavy also. And heck, I couldn't pick one up if it got down. And if it falls on you, it's going to do some damage. But, it's just amazing the technology they got built into those things now. It'd be nice in the old days to have a GPS. We had CBs, and you could talk to each other on your CBs, but we had to rig them up ourselves, you know. I even had a radar detector on mine for all the good it done, but that was way back in the old Whistler days, you know. And if they're wanting to get you, they're going to get you anyways, but I like the detectors. They're fun for me. And but they can be a pain in the rear, too, beeping all the time around town. But at any rate, those really look nice. They do have smaller tires on them, but they run real good high-end tires on them. And, man, that'd just be a ball to take off on one of those and go up through the mountains.
You're having a full fairing on them and keep the bugs and stuff off your legs and stuff, that'd be comfortable to ride. And, enough power to drive that on the highway, but it would be fun on the mountain, in the mountain, on the mountain roads, as long as it would, as long as any wet leaves are around, I guess. But, yeah, those days are long gone for me. I was contemplating buying one about 30 years ago. I said, nope. I think I've gotten smart enough now where I know that I probably wind up getting seriously injured on one, and your reflexes slow down too. It's just not the same. But I enjoyed them when I was younger. I got the good out of them, and rode enough to get my feel of it, I guess.
Yeah, they didn't have the big enough generators on them. They started out with magnetos, and then they went to alternators. But the diodes technology wasn't there. A lot of them even had selenium rectifiers, which is the Fend-type rectifier. And, oh, heck, they just didn't have enough power to support things. But those scooters now, the high-end ones, got heated handle grips. They got heated seats. And, you know, they got good LED lights on them nowadays. So it's really amazing. I didn't realize they had that much on them, but I'm not surprised in another way because, you know, when they went to this surface mount technology and all, the electronics got smaller. Well, you can do a lot more, and then the alternators are perfected now and have the bigger diodes in them and that. It's just pretty amazing the amount of accessories that you can put on those things.
Stuff now just to drive the power that the old stuff does, is they can put a lot more on it. But it wouldn't surprise me if there was some type of stabilization available for them as well. I know most all of them come with ABS brakes now too, and that was always a big thing with having disc brakes front and rear, because all the ones I had just had a disc on the front and a drum on the rear, and stopping is usually not a problem with the motorcycle, but because you usually stop a lot faster than the car with that, and that presents a problem to somebody behind you too. But I like to look at them, but I just can't ride them anymore.
Yeah, my Suzuki had dual discs on the front, if I remember rightly, and a drum on the back. You're quite correct. And yes, the scooters have ABS braking on them, just like the fancy motorcycles do, and quite a bit of storage space on the things, enough for two helmets in there. Now, I wouldn't want to ride one of them double, I don't think. The seat don't look like it'd be too accommodating for that second passenger, and it makes handling a lot worse when you got somebody on the back. And usually if I went on a trip, I'd take one of the kids or the wife with me. But I went down one time down the Ozarks on some oil that I hit, and wasn't at all expecting it, and I went home and I sold it. I just didn't want to take the risk anymore because I always like to take one of the kids or the wife with me, and I just didn't have the heart to leave them. My buddy and his wife, they just dropped the kid off at the grandparents and go. We could have, but I just didn't like that idea very well.
My road bike days ended about 1977. Got around a four-way stop and just tapped me and ran across and just tapped me in the rear tire behind me and spun me around and busted up my foot pretty badly. And I just, went and parked it in this guy's barn and came back down and got it after I went to the hospital and hauled it back up and sold it. You know, we were in the midst of moving and sold it after I moved, and that was it. And I did have some off-road bikes. I like off-road as well, but the TW200 Yamahas and the old Honda Trail 90s and stuff like that, they were always fun to ride off-road. I did motocross too earlier, but later on I just rode trails and stuff, and it was a lot of fun with those bikes. But they weren't really that powerful, but they were fun to ride down forest roads and stuff like that. But I just decided I wasn't going to ride that traffic anymore. So that was about, I think, 77 was the last time I rode a road bike.
Yeah, we lost a good friend of ours on the radio here. Lost his son. He was a firefighter down here, and that was just a mile or so down the road from us, and it wasn't anything to do with his fault. And he was a good kid. It was really sad. And I see one or two a week get plastered. And the mopeds, boy, you get hit on one of those things, you're just dead, that's all. And I can understand it, but the reason, if I was young enough, I'd consider one of those scooters is, if it'll run 94 miles an hour, well, you can get out of the way. I always tried to tell my dad I needed a bigger motorcycle because he'd always have to sign for me on the loan, when I was a kid. And he said, why? I said, I need to be able to get out of the way. And I wasn't kidding. You need that. And it's a lot better to get away from the cops on, too.
I tried to do that intentionally, but I may have at one time back in my much younger days. But, the mopeds and stuff they got now, this is crazy. I mentioned one to a state trooper one day. I said, he said, they got much right to raise you. I said, I know. I said, but they're generally going to be drinking anyway, on drugs. And I said, they're going to get killed, and somebody else's life, family's life is going to be ruined for the rest of their lives. I said, I don't understand the principle other than keeping them from behind a car, but behind the wheel of a car, but it just is dangerous. They wear black and they got any lights on them half the time. I don't know what type of insurance requirements, if any, they have. If they required, liability insurance and that sort of thing for them, real stuff, I doubt there'd be that many of them on the road.
Require them to have a helmet, and I don't think that went through, but they did pass that and have a reflective jacket on, and I think LED lights, but don't quote me on that, I'm not sure about it, but I do see a lot of them with the reflective jackets on anymore. No, I never did run from any red lights and siren or nothing like that, but if I'd happened to pass one, and seen sitting there with a radar trap, I wasn't above going down an alley or cutting through a park or something just to make sure he wasn't behind me, Jerry.
That sounds about right. I might deflect off my normal path a little bit after I ran through a trap.
I had a neighbor, his name was Floyd Bradley, and he was a police officer, and one night I come past him up there by Bob's Grill up in our little town in Kansas, and I knew he was running radar. I just knew in my heart he was, and they had I think it was 62 Fords or something, and they had a 190 engine or something. It was small V8. So I went up 10th Street, cut across behind the Medical Dairy, and then back on down to 10th Street, and I got down to the stop sign there, and my friend that was a police officer and a neighbor, he said, you always want to put your foot down when you come up to a stop sign or I'll give you a ticket. So I put my foot down and I looked in my rearview mirror. I seen these bright lights come on behind me. No red lights. So I went on up to Grand and I turned right. I went down an alley half a block away and I just drove into a garage and shut the garage door. And I heard this police car go speeding by. Well, needless to say, I made it on home a few blocks away. Well, it was about a month later, my buddy, Tobe, he went through some cones. And it was out of ignorance, I think, but he wasn't supposed to. It was fresh blacktop, but it had He'd been there all day. He didn't hurt anything. But they stopped him, and he had to pay a ticket, so I went with him down to the police station. I thought that might be interesting. And so his dad gave him the money to pay the ticket, and we went down there, and Bradley was there. And he says, "Say, Tom," he said, he always called me by my last name, but he said, "Was you up on Broadway speeding the other night?" And I said, "What night was that?" And he said, "A certain night." And I said, "Well, it's possible, Floyd." And I said, "I don't think so." He says, "Well, you turned left down 10th Street and went up behind the dairy." I said, "Yeah, yeah." I said, that might have been me. And, guys, I don't know. And he says, "Well, and I followed you down 10th Street there, and I seen you put your foot down 10th and Joplin, and I thought you was going to stop, and you turned on Grand, and I never seen you again." He says, "Was that you?" And I said, "No, I never left home that night, Floyd. Couldn't have been me."
That's funny. He has to get me back. I got to run downstairs and turn to do something with the TV for one of the kids. I'll be back in just a sec.
I got to go make a call down the hall, too. So I'll go ahead and clear with you, buddy. It's good to hear you. Yeah, he turned red as a beet when I told him that. But he said, "Better not happen again." 73 Jerry in 4DJC in 0TR clear.
Yeah, Todd, that was a good one. Later, string him along for a while. In 0TR in 4DJC clear. Talk to you later.
Is this Jimmy? You're pretty weak. I couldn't tell.
Keith, I guess I still got the same input problem.
Okay, Keith. You know, you're about a 5x5 if we was on HF. If you run HF, know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm going to have to probably send this radio in for see if I can get it straightened out. Yeah, I heard you mention the Suzuki. I was wondering what you had.
You heard me what?
Heard you mention you had a Suzuki and was wondering what it was.
It was a GS750, three-cylinder, two-cycle, water-cooled Suzuki. And, gosh, you remember the year on it, Bernice? I'm not sure now. It was in the 70s, though, Keith. My brother had just retired from the Navy, and he hit a 12-point buck on it. And he bought a bigger one later on. He lived through that, and he told me if I'd come to Washington, D.C., where he was at the Military Personnel Command, and get it, he said I could have it. And so we went out there and got it.
Tango.
Rusty, yeah, I remember that era because, you know, Kawasaki had several three-cylinder two-strokes out around that time, the old KH series. Love those bikes, love that time. I had a 900 Z1B around that time, and that was about the last bike I had, too. Probably a good thing. Yeah, it probably wouldn't have went so well if I'd have had one later on in life.
You guys talking, thought I would jump in and say hello, good afternoon, and see what kind of trouble you were trying to get in or get out of there, Tom.
Don't be mistaken, have me mistaken for somebody else. I ain't that type of guy. Ain't that right, Keith?
Roger that. I've been accused of some things that will not confirm or deny on there. Anyway, how's it going with you today, Rusty? Maybe a little low on audio. Apologize. I tried something. It's apparently not working.
Sure, not bad. I went up to the Ham Fest today and wandered around. Got me a new 2-meter antenna to go on the car. So I'll get that put up on the car here. I got that put up on the car this afternoon, so I can start using that. So, you know, things like just went up there and had a good walk around and saw Chad and several other folks and didn't see a whole lot of folks I thought I might see there, but
you know, it was all right. Bob and I went up there and we walked around for about an hour, hour and a half, and got through and came on back, and that was about it for the day. So, you know, it is what it is, as they say. And go ahead, Tom.
It's Ginger O'Teon. Where'd you go, Waynesville, Rusty?
Roger.
Yeah, they say that's a real good one. Well, Keith, I am showing 103 Fahrenheit in the sun on my weather station, and it says the heat index is 117 with 41% humidity. I don't know how to be polite and say this, but that just sucks.
For CHY, I think that's about as quiet as you can get. I considered going up to Waynesville, too. I went last year and really enjoyed it, but, man, this heat's been rough on me, too.
There about, we got there about 8:30, or between 8:15 and 8:30, and we left there about 9:30, quarter 10, and headed back. I mean, we had seen everything we wanted to see or could see, whatever else, so there wasn't any point in hanging around any longer, so we loaded up, and we were back to Bob's house by 11 o'clock, and, you know, so that was the way we went, and just, you know, took it easy and didn't do a whole lot of getting out in the sun. It was still comfortable when we left there, so it wasn't too bad at all. But I'm glad I didn't stay up there into the afternoon. And I'll go ahead, Tom.
Roger. Well, there goes my alarm saying the sprinkler hose is ready to take loose out there. Well, Keith, Rusty has one of those $100,000 Teslas, and that's the reason he can afford to go up to places like that. Us poor guys can't afford it.
Roger that. I did not know Rusty had a Tesla. That's pretty awesome news. And really the other thing that killed it for me is I just got back from Cincinnati last week, and I drove up there and back. Business trip that I ran solo because they were wanting to haul five people in a minivan. I just wasn't feeling that. I wasn't much in the mood for the travel, and I would imagine it's probably a little farther for you, Rusty, over in your area than it is even for me.
Roger, and if you believe that about the Tesla from Tom, you need to have. I got a little piece of land I want to talk to you about. Some mountaintop property I got for sale, and I'll get with you and talk about that. It was round trip from my house to Bob's house and back here was 100 miles. Up. I parked at his house. We rode up together and then come back. And it was 100 miles, so it was, you know, it wasn't a real, it wasn't, like I said, it was a fairly decent trip, and we had a chance to go up there and see what was on. We ran into Chad, KO4HTX, and we ran into Dave, AE4EK, I think it was, is his call, and things like that. So we had a chance to just, and we walked around. We walked all through the main building. We walked all through the barn out there where they had tailgaters out there, and had a chance to talk to our Jim Boner, Dr. Jim Zay, and hadn't talked to him in a long while, and he and I are fairly good friends, so we had a chance to talk with him for a little bit, and then we motored on back to Bob's house, and I motored on back home. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, it was a natural mistake, Rusty. I kind of got you crossed up with K4SV. He's the one that's got five Teslas. A matter of fact, that's the truth. No, Rusty or me, either one can afford a Tesla. Not even the cheap one. And I ain't buying an electric car anyways. Biden can stuff it. And I just ain't going to do it. Got an old Toyota here, 2011 Avalon, and we love it. And we're going to keep it. Yeah, geez, those were the good old days. Those were good motorcycles, and those two-strokes would get it on. Especially when he's up in the mountains, they had a lot of low-end torque. and you didn't have to be shifting all the time like the Gold Wings and the Harleys did. The Harleys had quite a bit of torque, though. But the Gold Wings and the Suzukis and that back then, you had to, and the Yamahas, you had to downshift and get them up in their high RPM range to have the torque to pull those big hills down in the Ozarks. But we really had a good time on those things. They always used to kid me. It had auto lube injection, so it didn't really smoke hardly any at all. And once you got going down the highway, it was smooth as silk. But in town, it was kind of a bear, you know, the way it idled and that. I mean, it was top heavy. But that 900 Kawasaki you had, that was a hot rod at the time. This Enduro TR. Go ahead, Keith.
And I think it was Suzuki that ended up finally taking them. I think it was the GF1100 is the first one that come out that could actually take that bike. Yeah, mine was a Z1B. It was a 75 model. And just, man. and I had a buddy of mine that had one of the KH, I think it was a 550 at the time. And we'd get in races through the neighborhood, you know, just stop sign to stop sign, and he would whack my behind. Get out past a few blocks, you know, give me a little open road, and I could take him, but just from stop sign to stop sign, he'd just tear me up.
N4DJC.
Pass her over to me, and I'll send it down to Keith, and then back over to Jerry, if that's all right.
And on, hello, Jerry. Good to hear you this afternoon. Yeah, it's that was one thing I never got into was motorcycle riding. I mean, I had a couple of good friends that had some real nice cycles, and but they were all of that stuff was out of my range of doing things. I just couldn't afford it, and they scared the heck out of me anyway. So, you know, I mean, I kind of stayed away from them. Played nice and went about my business of doing what I wanted to do and took things easy. So, you know, those folks, there are folks that enjoy riding those things and more power to them. But for me, So, but that's what it did and where it went. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, Rusty, you probably made the right decision, but mine was given to me. That's the only way I could afford it, and that was the truth. But long story. But my brother, Keith, had the EMTs. His wife worked as an EMT, and she was on the back when they hit that deer. And she wasn't hurt, but he was. He broke his collarbone, busted his spleen, punctured his lung. But they had that rack mounted, and it's a Suzuki GT750 on it instead of 3030 Winchester or something. Always got a kick out of that. My mom, Ronnie had another deer in there, and when they went out to visit him, she wouldn't sleep in that room because that deer was staring at her off of the wall. I'll never forget it. But that was the biggest deer killed in that county in 8 years, I think, and he got it on a Suzuki. But it was a lot of fun, and my daughter and I, we'd go down camping in the Ozarks and take a little tent with a bunch of other riders, and got a lot of fond memories of it. It was fun. But go ahead, Keith, and pass her over to N4DJC.
Rusty, I've had that 900 in town too. I had that 900. A coworker of mine had it. It was a garage kept. Had about 1,200 miles on it. He won $1,200 for it. And I just didn't pass it up. And I kind of got all that stuff out of my system. Probably if I'd have had 1 year later doing some of the stuff that I did back then, I wouldn't have made it to the ripe old age I am now. So it's probably a good thing I never had another one. I still get the itch every now and then. St. Jerry was talking about the like the Trail 90 and stuff, kind of kind of re-engine for something like that too. They brought out Trail 125 now, and it looks like it would just be a fun workhorse of a trail bike.